Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Lingwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, especially the joy you feel when you share God's love with others. As we do each week, I'd like to begin our program with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. The title of this particular story is Open Your Mind and Heart with Love. Jesus watched and listened as three gentlemen sat and shared some bread with him. One said to him, "Master, we have told you what was on our mind. Now it's time for you to tell us what's on yours." Jesus nodded in agreement and said, "It is good to share not only bread, which is the staff of life, but also what is in the mind and in the heart. Each of us has been given a gift, and when we share that gift, we are truly blessed." The second man said to Jesus, "Master, I've often thought about those who have lived before us, about the truths handed down to them and the truths they have passed on to us. Will that chain ever be broken?" "No, my friend," Jesus said. "There will always be people who can teach and inspire others. A day will come when people will grow in knowledge and travel all over the world, touching every land and every body of water. Humankind will feel the clouds and understand more about the sun, the moon, and the stars, just as we understand more clearly what was written a long time ago. So too, those in the future will see the Father's gifts in a new light. As humanity spreads over the face of the earth, so too will knowledge of the Father increase." The third man asked, "Master, do you think we understand the Father's words as well as those to whom they were first given?" Jesus smiled and answered, "Some do, but some never will. For unless people open their heart and mind with love to the Spirit, they will not understand the Father's words." A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening writes in the section titled Author's Note, and this is to his latest book titled Fresh Eyes Upon the World, Making a Spectacular Journey. And he writes, "From the moment we are conceived, we begin a ceaseless journey of change that forms who we are. Many factors influence and shape our identities. We do our best to function well in a world full of tumult and challenges. Survival for most of us presents some daunting tasks we must resolve before we can move on to the next plateau of our destiny. Life for us humans is full of sublime experiences and terrifying terrors. We do, however, control more of our lives than we realize. Oftentimes we feel like a victim to the rough and unpredictable tides of life. We feel tossed around by waves over which we have no control. These feelings can be effectively managed once we gain a command of ourselves." And he continues, "Life is synonymous with self-discovery. We are always learning about who we are But this process requires some serious soul-searching. We need to sort out all the threads of our previous experiences in order to weave a smooth tapestry of who we want to be in this world. In this book, I've compiled many relevant questions for you to think about and to explore. The answers are intended to inspire you to reflect upon your own life to see how they impact you. I strongly believe that the only way we as individuals can liberate ourselves from delusions, fear, or prejudice is to embark upon a passionate journey of self-examination. Society can heal and transform its darkness only when each of us develops holistic, compassionate, and humanitarian core values that will lead to a happier, more fulfilled existence. Our future survival rests with us. Civilization will thrive as we champion the virtues that can make life safer and more beautiful for all of us. The author of those words and our guest this evening is Neil Grace, who has always followed different paths to discover unexplored frontiers. Listen to this, from living in the woods for months to traveling with a backpack around the world to forging a career in the business world that made him a millionaire. A passionate observer, Neil began chronicling his experiences. Inspiring others to live freely and creatively, he has performed at various venues, including Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. He has authored 2,500 poems, 2 opera librettos, and Fresh Eyes Upon the World, this his 15th book. His recent Supreme Master television interview will be seen in over 35 countries and translated into 12 different languages. He and his wife live in California. Neil Grace, welcome to Amplify.
Father Ron, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here and to interact with you and communicate in such a way that we can help inspire others to live a more magical and spiritual life.
Thank you. We all have that ability, don't we? I mean, in to one degree or another, from just the experience we've had in life, and just from your about the author or the opening words that I just read from your book from the author's note, we could probably talk about those 2 pages for the whole program, really, because there's so much. There's like a lot of truths in there that could very well be, it could be developed in so many ways. I read about the Supreme Master television interview. Is that over now? Because your book was written a little bit ago.
Yes, that's been complete. And I guess you can go on to their website to see the video.
And tell us, what does the title reveal to us about this, your latest book, Fresh Eyes Upon the World? Making life a spectacular journey.
Well, I think that title is very apropos and very cogent and very applicable to everyone, because so many of us look at the world from a very narrow perspective. We look at it almost through a tunnel, and we have a lot of preconceptions about things, and that is not good because it limits what really is there. And what's really there is far more than our myopic vision or can see. What's really there is an incredible mystery and beauty. And yes, this is the manifestation of spirit, as I call it. And spirit can be defined in any, using any terminology, but what it is so magical and so wonderful, and it is spectacular. And fresh eyes, if we look by removing the veils of illusions and the veils of our own subjective slant on things, our preconceptions, then we can see the world afresh. We can see it new. We can see deeper into it. We can see it almost like looking through a prism that bends light into a multitude of colors, rainbow colors. And this requires what you said earlier about an open heart and an open mind that is not influenced by our conditioning, by our narrow-mindedness, by our preconceptions. So the title is, Let's Really See the World as It Is. Let's really go out into the world, open our eyes, open our senses, open all of the passion that we have within us in a way that dances with the world, in a way that embraces the world to see it much more profoundly. And by doing so, we are uplifted. We are empowered by spirit to be more loving, to be more grateful, and to be more alive.
And to help us to do that, you have authored 83 questions divided into five sections. First is self-empowerment and relationships. The second, hotly debated issues. Third, the world of nature. Fourth, spirituality and philosophy. And the last one, other subjects. And probably for the purposes of our program, I'll go anywhere you want to go at any time. If you think it's going to further our discussion, it'd be good for our audience to focus mostly on spirituality and philosophy, but beginning with self-empowerment and relationships, because I think we almost have to begin there in order to reflect on the other questions and to further understand what you've just said about the book and why you have written it. And from the words that I read from the very beginning, at the very beginning of the program, from the author's note, and the very first question is, how can I be more receptive to new ideas? And let me just read the section that jumps out to me, then let me ask the question again. You write, one of the best ways to become more receptive to new ideas is to sit back, allowing them to come to you in a neutral frame of mind. Don't prematurely jump to conclusion about these ideas. Say to yourself how fortunate you are to be given them. Sift through them slowly, savor them, ruminate upon them, and then try them on to see if they enhance your life. It's almost like this has to be the first question, certainly in a book like this, and probably at different times in our life.
Yes, I think that is the prerequisite to everything, because when we shut things off, or we close the door to a new discovery, a new exploration, we are again inviting the status quo to control us. And to be open to new things requires, if anything, a neutrality, because new ideas, new concepts are happening all the time. And these things can really become the bridge between us and islands of incredible revelations. We build a bridge by being open to these ideas, and it doesn't mean to accept automatically everything that is presented to you. It means to see if that fits well in your life. See if it serves you, if it is a source of light that can be shed upon your own life. And openness is a great attribute to own. Openness does not mean being so impressionable that you're being swayed by everything that comes at you left and right. It means that you're really willing to learn. And when the human mind is an incredible instrument, and the more it's open to learning things, the more it expands in its consciousness. And that will, later on, will segue into what that means spiritually, because that's where everything leads to ultimately.
And if it's truth, truth builds on truth, doesn't it? And it opens your mind and opens your very soul to new ideas, not, as you said, to take away from the foundation of something you believe in, but to understand that truth is can be full of so much meaning that what we understand at one level can be expanded to another level so as to bring even greater meaning and power to that truth.
Precisely. It's like you're adding on, you're building on to you're adding new rooms to your home, and your home is your consciousness. It's not a literal home, but it's the metaphysical, the spiritual home. And this is the journey. We have a short journey through life, as we all know, probably less than a century for most of us. And everything is an accumulation. We're accumulating information. We're also accumulating insight and understanding, which helps us transcend the fears, the prejudice, the dogmas, all the things, the doctrines, the things that don't serve us or that keep us trapped or keep us in a limited capacity of how we function and how we interact with the world.
And the second question, I think, also is part of the foundation of this book and certainly of our life and many of us who hold on to some religious truths. How can I come from my higher self and love all people? And you always have one sentence underneath it, oftentimes is the answer essentially to the question without developing it further as it needs to be. You write, treat everyone as if he or she were your friend. And then you write in this particular paragraph, when you make peace with a vast variety of people on earth, your experience of life brightens and you feel safer and more relaxed. Most of us want to be loved, but we forget how to give love because we are worried about rejection. Open your heart to other people. They cannot hurt you or disappoint you unless you allow them to do this. And although the heart and mind are certainly joined in so many ways, almost as if to become one, the first question to me deals more with a mind, and this one deals more with a heart, even though it deals with both of them at the same time. So how can I come to my higher self and love all people?
Well, I think that's the ultimate question for human beings, for all of us. By the way, the mind and the heart are inseparable. I think that we make a distinction that's a fallacy. I think that the best way to understand how we operate is know that the mind and the heart are a continuation of each other. And answering that question, Father Ron, about how we can love all people, I think the best thing is you can't love them. I mean, you could if you reach an incredibly high state of consciousness, as the great masters and the great teachers have done throughout history, especially ancient history. I think that you need to be understanding and empathetic and respectful of people initially. That's the prerequisite. You need to respect. Everybody is really trying to do well in this world. Most of us are. And I think that if you remove the filters of judgment and you come to a new person, or you interact with a new person, look at this person as a miracle of the cosmos, as a miracle of spirit. And this person is a divine entity, is a culmination of all the forces of nature, just as special, just as unique, and just as wondrous as you are. And instead of looking down on this person or questioning this person or being skeptical about this person, again, going back to the first question, be open to this person. Be open to this person. You might not be able to love that person the way you love your partner or your child, your parent or your best friend right away, but you can love the person by caring for him as a fellow human being.
Yes. And the next question that I would like to draw from, and I'll read us out to our first break, is why... Welcome back to Amplify. We had that warning. Neil, that's one of those things like happens in the world, that there are just some things we can't control. And when a weather bulletin comes in, it's very important that people hear it, especially when life can be at stake. And we see so many bad things happening in the world. At the present moment, we have had another mass shooting, and we now have as many mass shootings at this time in our history than we did last year. And we have so many other things that that we can point to where there there is so many things about life that concern us. This isn't one of the questions, but it came up because of how we were interrupted there suddenly without warning. And life can mm-hmm. be like that. How should we deal with what we can't control?
Well, that again is a great question, because that's the crux of so many of our issues, because we want to control things. We have our egos, and kind of our predisposition almost instinctively is to control our lives, because when we control our lives, we feel safe and secure. There are a lot of potential dangers out there. However, the essence of the answer is trust. We need, and this kind of segues into spirituality, because we need to be able to trust. Most people think, well, I trust myself. I have my own self-esteem, my own belief systems that I project onto the world, and I create the reality that I anticipate. We need to trust. We need to trust not so much ourselves. We need to trust the universe. We need to trust that whatever created the physical universe, the God power that created this, the omniscient, omnipotent being that created this, created it with a sense of purpose, that the universe is inherently designed to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. Now, is it infallible? People do get hurt. People do get killed. Unspeakable crimes do happen. But if we could trust, the more we can trust the unfolding process of our own destinies, I believe the safer we will be. And we get so upset, understandably, at all the bad things that happen in the world, that we forget the trillions of good things that happen simultaneously that are 1,000 times more frequent than the bad things. The bad things kind of rip apart our sense of security and our sense of safety, and they really affect us adversely, of course, because they're so horrific. But we need to focus on the good things, not the negative things. We need to see that there's so many wonderful things happening on the physical and the non-physical plane. And these good things are beyond our control. We can't really control them, but we're a part of them. We have to remember we're an integral part of the divine process of life that is unfolding. And the more I don't like to use the word surrender so much, but the more mm-hmm. we give to that, the more that we befriend that unknown or that thing we can't control called life that's beyond our own physical bodies, the more awakened we become, and the more we become one with life, and the safer we will be.
I use the question, how should we deal with what we can't control? And if I thought a little more quickly, I probably would have thought of the question, the 33rd question, what is the best way to cope with all the negative things happening in the world, in which you then add, few of us realize that we have within us the power to navigate our destinies. You spoke about trust, how important trust is. But then you also write in this chapter, coping with negativity is a challenge. It is difficult to minimize the gravity of some of these things, and no one should. At the same time, if you focus on these things, allowing them to engulf you emotionally, you then have lost your freedom and your love of life. This serves no purpose except to harm you as an individual. It takes a heavy toll on you, saddling you with worry, trepidation, and hopelessness. The best way to cope with the negative things of the world is to not give them as much credence in your own personal life. Be aware of them and then move on. If you feel compelled to take action, then do something constructive to help resolve the causes of the problem. Anything you'd like to amplify to that?
Oh, I think that's perfectly articulated. Yes, I think that we need to reinforce that we're not at the mercy of things that are out to get us. I mean, we tend to be overly vigilant as a species, and we're always looking for things, not always, but oftentimes that energy rules much of our thinking. And we need to really remember that we're gliding through the world, we're flying through the world, and the world is supporting us. It is not out to harm us. It is designed, and we're designed with it, to coexist harmoniously. It's designed, nature has designed us to function in such a way that we thrive. It's not a destructive nature. Mm-hmm. Nature is not, you're not born to be destroyed, you're born to live. You're born to love, you're born to be creative, you're born to flourish, to enjoy the experience and to be grateful for the very amazing gift of your existence.
Well, let's go into spirituality and philosophy. There's so many things we could talk about here, no question about it. And they are all important, and you have something to say about each of them, usually in 2 to 4 pages, maybe 5 pages, short, to the point, mm-hmm. but it's like someone speaks the truth to you, and then you find a way to unfold it. Let's go to the prime question for some of us, and maybe for this program, which is question 68, which is, what is God? And you expand on that. God is something we create based upon how we want to perceive this world. Tell us a little bit about how it is that you view God, how you answer that question. What is God? Who is God?
Well, I think God is the most phenomenal, I don't even know what to call it. It's so incredible. It transcends words.
Yes.
I think God permeates everything. I think God is the creation and the creator of everything seen and unseen. And we often try to explain these things that are so imponderable, that are so incomprehensible, that we project again our own values. And we make, and there's a word that's a fancy word called anthropomorphism, that we ascribe characteristics to God that are really an extension of human-like qualities. And I think that God is so much greater than all of that. God is the creator of everything that exists. And I believe that we are the child of this creation, everything. We are an extension of this God, of this force, of this energy, of this light, of this incredible love, because it has to be love. God has to be love because so many things are working intricately and designed in such a harmonious way as to everything is put together and this grand thing called the universe. And it's so miraculous. It's a miracle. And God is the creator of miracles. And if we worship and cherish ourselves, the next person to us, every living species, if we worship the grasses, the trees, the flowers, the clouds, the stars, if we worship these things and cherish them and honor them and pay homage to them, then we are really celebrating that which I call God.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no limitation to this God. As we define it, God is not working against us. God is not trapping us in some kind of a lesson. A lot of people think it is. I don't believe so. I believe that God is just the light of the universe that is self-replicating, that is perpetuating itself in this miraculous and sublime way. And God, the greatest connection we can make to God is through our hearts. Our hearts when we open to our feelings, our emotions, and we become childlike and innocent in our experiences, then we have opened to this incredible vessel of light, this sanctuary of beauty and serenity called God.
Part of the way that I would say it is from our particular belief is the desire for God is written in the human heart. As you talked about the importance of the heart, because man is created by God and for God, and so God never ceases to draw man to himself, and only in God will we truly find truth and happiness. And we go back a long time where humankind has been trying to find a way to understand God better, how he is surrounded by God's creation, natural ways in which God is revealed to us. And we try to project our own ideas, but I think that's part of the evolution of truth. The difficulty is, going back to the beginning of the program, we have to be open to further truth, a further explication of the truth, new ideas, because that revelation of the truth continues. And I tend to believe that we're at a point where maybe there's going to be some jump in our understanding, because we're seeing that happening in terms of the natural order of creation, the universe. So much is being explored, so much is being understood, and I don't believe that we can understand what has been created by God without somehow coming to a better understanding of who God is, without denying some of the classical ways in which we have looked upon God in the past. But that's my own ideas.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I resonate with that. It's well articulated, because God is, the more we expand, the more awake we become, the more conscious we become, the more universal we become, and then we really reach higher levels of awareness, and it's a continuous expansion, and we become much more congruent with the nature of God. I think when people pull away, when they're in denial, or they gravitate toward the darkness, and some people do, they're pulling away from God. And I think the more we go toward this understanding of God and this expansive understanding of God, the freer we'll become in so many ways. And the ultimate freedom to me is really transcending everything, including the body. And that's a whole other subject, when we die and just melting or merging with the oneness of creation.
Which might bring us to the question then that you ask in number 70 question, what is the true purpose of life? And your first response is to be fully alive without fear and constraints, is to become one with the purpose of life. And this is one of those very short ones, and so let me read it all. This is a proverbial question everyone asks over and over. The answer is simple. The purpose of life is to explore yourself, to discover who you are. Once known, you live it with great passion, joy, and reverence. One of the main purposes is to embrace your spiritual nature, finding peace in the refuge of your soul. Once you awaken from the illusions of the world, you are free to celebrate the gift of life in every moment. Then you learn, you transcend, you rejoice, you love, and you give ceaselessly to the world with immense gratitude and appreciation. You love from your heart, dancing and singing as you make your way down the amazing path of life. So it's one of the shorter responses, and yet probably one that has as much meaning as any of the other longer ones, certainly in its importance.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's very true. I think that, we become ambassadors to spiritual awakening. And we really, I mean, the more we can live with joy and appreciation and reverence and passion, the more we light up the world. We really light up the world. We light ourselves up, and by lighting ourselves up, we're like fireflies in the summertime at night. The more of us who are lit up, the brighter the night sky becomes.
Yes. And then if we were to go to question 54, what is the nature of traditional religions? Your first response is, the one religion that transcends them all is the religion of unconditional love, as we have been saying. And yet you indicate that most traditional religions today are remnants of fanatical organizations from ancient times whose survival was predicated on convincing their followers of fantastically imagined stories that were meant to be taken as fact and true. A great religion is one that has no doctrines, does not erect extravagant houses of worship, does not demand conformity, never intimidates with threats of condemnation and punishment, will not insist on converting everyone into believing the same story. A great religion dissolves and ultimately disappears in the power of life itself. So there were some ways I would look at that, that applies to Christianity, for example. And I would have a response to that in some way, which we can talk about our discussion. But tell us a little bit more about what is the nature of this question, the answer to it.
Well, I think, and I don't mean to negate religions, because religions serve a really wonderful purpose. I think that some people, a lot of people, when they get involved intimately with their religion, they become exclusive, and it becomes an organization, and mm-hmm. it becomes too much of we versus them. And I think religions need to incorporate a sense that of love and reverence and holiness for everyone, no matter what the expression is. And too many people proclaim, this is the way, this is the path, this is what you need to do. Well, it might be good for those people who belong to that particular school of thinking, but there are multitudes of spiritual and religious expressions. And we need to, and many people forget that those other expressions are just as valid as my own. It's just different. It's a different, there's all different paths leading to God, leading to divinity. And each path has its pros and cons. But no one path can really state that this is the only path.
Mm-hmm. No, and we, of course, have been created, from my perspective, to know, love, and serve God, and each religion in its own way, and the many world religions, are part of the search for God. And because we're human beings, we approach things differently because we each have our own history, a history that sometimes influences us for the good, but also for the bad, because as you point out in question 56, there are those who believe that God is a God of vengeance. And we certainly agree very strongly on that, that no, God is a God of love. So you ask, is there a vengeful God? And the only vengeful God, you answer, is the one we foster inside our twisted beliefs that are riddled with fear and unresolved anger. And if I can read just a little bit more from it, because these are your words, most people who believe in a vengeful God are operating under an obfuscated veil of fear. This fear leads to rigidity, intractability, and paranoia. At its worst, it has permitted individuals belonging to larger groups to support burning millions of people to death based upon ridiculous accusations of witchcraft and other distortions of life. Vengeance is an aberrant form of human rage that singles out its victims by unleashing brutal acts to right the wrongdoing. And that's not our God, is it?
No. No, that to me is again fanatical thinking. that is taking life, the diversity of life, and is ripping it apart and demanding everybody follow my way, this way, and it becomes, it's actually a form of demented thinking. And that's really not divinity. That's not the sacredness that we real, that really exists. And I mean, I think a vengeful God is really an opportunity that people use as an excuse to perpetrate their own inner malcontent and their own inner disdain for others.
You introduced a little bit earlier the concept of trust. How can we live more in present time? You say that when we can trust the world and trust ourselves, we can be fully alive in the present time. And you indicate that this is a great question because it is the crux of how important most of us operate as we traverse the paths of our life. And the main ingredient needed to allow the present to happen more palpably and consciously is trust. We have just about 2 minutes. If you can just respond to that a little bit, to this particular question.
Well, I think that, again, people give up their sense of power, and I don't mean it in a negative way. Power can be a beautiful thing. Power is actually synonymous with humility. But if we can have more trust in our own intuition and our own self and trust in the world more, as I said earlier, then we feel we're very much at the apex of our own creativity and our own love of life. And we're not easily influenced by outside forces that try to take us away from the purity of our own vision, our own mission in life. And everyone has a mission. Everyone has a purpose. And I really believe that each of us contributes in a significant way to the world, no matter what. Even if you just smile at a stranger, that's a contribution.
No question. Let me just read us out to our next break. Reading again from this particular question, how can we live more in present time? You write, living in the moment is pure freedom. It is a pervasive relaxation engendering a deep, sweet, nurturing sense of peace. Live in the moment by allowing yourself the glorious gift of enjoying whatever has been proffered by life for you to discover, to learn from, and to enjoy by surrendering to the highest power there is, the miracle of the moment. Welcome back to Second Hour of Amplify, stormy night here in the Pittsburgh area. We're sitting in almost the middle of it, right off to the side, the communities that we had another weather warning, and we'll just be here, and Neil, don't be surprised if another bulletin happens to come on. We're in the midst of a storm, but we are in no way the kind of shape that people are fearing Dorian and what troubles he may bring to the coastal part of the eastern part of our country. We've been talking, and well, let me just introduce once again. Some people might just be joining us now. Our guest is Neil Grace. We're talking about his latest book. It's his 15th book. This one's titled Fresh Eyes Upon the World, Making Life a Spectacular Journey. And he addresses it with 83 questions and answers and asks us just to open our heart and our mind and see what it is we can believe, what we can hold on, what we can build our own life on. We began with self-empowerment and relationships area. Now we're talking about spirituality and philosophy. Let's talk about a couple more in that area, Neil, and then let's just jump around. I have some areas that perhaps address contemporary issues that people might be very much interested in. Anytime you want to go somewhere, a particular question, please feel free to do that. So let's begin with the question 62 that you and I talked a little bit about in one of our phone conversations before setting up this program, and that is, why are some people staunch atheists? And your first response is, no one knows the nature of the universe or its purpose. So we must be careful to not be too presumptuous with our conclusions. Your response.
Mm-hmm. Well, as this specific chapter states, I don't believe that anyone is really an atheist. I think the people that are very strong atheists are caught up in the definition of the word God. And I think that is what throws them. And the definition of God and the ramifications of the connotations of what God means. And I understand that they can be very skeptical and very jaundiced in their position, because if, you know, some of the descriptions of what God is, you know, in the earlier times, as a, you know, how we describe God as kind of a fatherly, omnipotent or omniscient figure in the clouds. I mean, some of it is a little bit strange, but the truth is there are no atheists, because if you define God as just nature or just creation itself, or the universe, if you define God as the unknown, or you define God as something that just creates unto itself. I mean, we can't create a blade of grass. We can't create a baby. We can't create a planet or a sun or a star, or even, I mean, we can plant trees and things, but we don't know really the remarkable, incredible mystery that goes into creation of any one singular thing, any one entity. So I think that people who say that they're atheists are really trying to overly control their lives and thinking and dismissing the power and the mystery of the unknown. And I've spoken to many people who said, I'm an atheist, I don't believe in anything. Well, that's not true, because if you look up in the stars, we don't even know where the universe ends. We don't know what the universe is, if there are multi-universes. We don't know any of these things. And you need to be gracious and humble and surrender to that unknown. And that unknown, call that God. Because God, I mean, people get thrown by the word God, the Lord of existence, the creation of all things. I think that people are overly amped in trying to regulate their lives by making assumptions and drawing conclusions that are far too etched in stone. And going back to the very first question, Father Ron, that we discussed about being open, you need to be open. You could say, I don't know what God really is, or how it functions, or what it is, or he, she, or what, but I'm willing to explore possibilities.
Okay, and I believe that there are atheists. There are many different forms, of course. There isn't just one, but there are those who attack my particular beliefs. I mean, I can deal with that. That's not the problem. But they say that my teaching is false, and that it's if my life is somewhat of a failure and meaningless, where we believe that our beliefs are in union with the most secret desires of the human heart. So we approach life differently, and that doesn't surprise me, because we're going to find that in lots of ways. In terms of some of the contemporary issues that we are facing, let's go backwards to the first section on self-empowerment relationships, the question number 21, which is, why do some people become bullies, racists, and terrorists, and how can we heal them? And you write, the abrasive acts of a person can be changed through the right guidance and love.
So, yes. Yeah. I think it's one of the saddest commentaries about human behavior when a person is psychologically damaged, for lack of a better word, because of his past experiences, her past experiences, but they become bullies and racists and terrorists. I think that these people are really have been misguided. And the only way to heal them, and it's going to be a prodigious challenge indeed, but is to help enlighten them, is help to steer them in the right direction, one that is buttressed by love and kindness and compassion, because these people who become these bullies, racists, and terrorists are operating with a fire underneath them, so to speak, with a fire in their souls. They're angry. They have that unresolved anger. They're blameful. They're hurting. And their hurt, what they do is they project their hurt onto other people, whether it's mm-hmm. a race of people or a group of people, whether it's a religion. I mean, you mentioned that people, they criticize, and it's an extreme form of criticism. A bully is a person, and I even say it, a bully is a coward who is afraid of being weak, and he seeks out weaker people that he can intimidate and abuse and be abrasive with. The only thing we can do, and many of these people are disturbed because of their own previous experiences, and we need to do everything we can. I mean, their parents, their friends, and it's not easy to try to help them, to try to heal them. But it is one of the saddest and most pathetic and most dangerous forms of human behavior, especially a terrorist is really a racist and a bully combined, which I answer in this question.
Yes.
And a terrorist has no tolerance. One of the biggest things that exists for many people who struggle in life is they don't have very much tolerance. They're not able to be accepting of the diversity of life. They're beyond reproach. They're so upset that somebody is different, and they blame. There's such a powerful energy and a very toxic one in the blame dynamic. And the only way to reverse this is through a massive, massive rehabilitation mm-hmm. that takes place over a long period of time, if the person is even willing to do this. And we have to do it with a lot of compassion, because these people are also missing a fundamental ingredient in the human network of attributes, and that's compassion.
Right. The way you say it in the book is show him love, show him how violence and hatred only intensify the suffering of the world. Show him that he can belong to civilization when his heart opens and his mind becomes clear. If we can save one terrorist from falling into a funnel of death and destruction, we've made the world a little safer and a little more peaceful. Let's jump to another question in the time that's left to us. And it's number 42 I'm looking at now. Why do some government leaders become corrupt with their power? You indicate we need to create a new form of selecting our leaders, one based upon merit, not power. And you begin to write in this section, most leaders are high achievers who aspire to command authority over others. These people come from the mold that breeds strong-willed, assertive, demonstrative, and outgoing personalities. They are people who know how to ingratiate themselves in the good graces of others, who will eventually yield their own power to the stronger leader. Once a person with these characteristics gains a momentum of authority, it is difficult to stop. He or she is tempted by the constant allure of more power. They get caught up in an increasingly intense spiral. Again, then, why do some government leaders become corrupt with their power? Amplify on it, please.
Well, unfortunately, and this is a tragic statement, because it's pretty universal. It's a global phenomenon. Many, many leaders who reach that level of fame and power get corrupted by it. And what that means is they forget where they came from, and they become such an authority, and very few people can question them or topple them from their position, that they become almost like demagogues. They become ruthless in their thinking, and they want to advance themselves. And the more that they can do this psychologically, the more tyrannical they become. Not all leaders, of course, but the humanitarian ingredient often falls away, often is left behind. When a person has power, when a political leader has this kind of power over a whole nation, the nation is then held hostage in the grip or in the vice of this of the leader. And it's very difficult to bring forth a sense of compassion and humanitarian values when a person is trying to hold on to his power. That's another thing. When people have a lot of power or they have a lot of wealth, not all of them, but some of them, when they want to sustain that, they want to perpetuate that. In order to do that, a lot of fear comes into play, into the equation. And they think that other people might try to usurp them, might try to steal their power from them, might try to steal their wealth or weaken or diminish who they are. So they become over-vigilant in maintaining their status of power. That's why I think it's very important that a person who does aspire to reach great heights of authority over millions of people needs to be a lover of life, needs to be a champion of the goodness, of the virtues, of the spirituality, needs to be a leader who wants good things to happen to everyone, not just the elite, not just his cronies, not just a certain echelon of people, but everyone. And he needs to be much more universal in his thinking rather than just, okay, this is my tribe. I'm going to only protect my tribe and neglect or ignore the other tribes, meaning nations. That's not good.
And that can happen at the level of a family too, can it? It doesn't have
absolutely.
To be not just over a nation, but over an individual, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Again, that's a very prevalent kind of aberrant way of being in all levels of society, from the intimate family, the nucleus family, to a whole nation. People wield power over others. And they do that because they're very insecure, and they're also trying to establish themselves, and they think that by wielding power over others or manipulating others, that they're advancing themselves, when what they're really doing is they're setting themselves up for a rather unhealthy interplay with other people.
Let's, I don't know how far we'll get here. We just have a couple minutes to our next break. Let me just introduce it, the next question, and then we can take the break, and then we come back, we'll talk about some other questions. I want to get to other subjects section, those who refuse to vote. The vegan diet, it seems to me you dealt with that one with a lot of feeling. And I've been mm-hmm. a vegetarian, not a vegan. I've been a vegetarian for probably 35 or more years. And about loving life and music, but again, do advanced life forms exist in the universe, and can we contact them? Let me just begin to talk about. We'll discuss this when we come back. But you write, there are many things we cannot know about the nature of the universe. We speculate about these phenomena all the time. We deduce theories that are somewhat substantiated by scientific inquiry. But the truth is, we know practically nothing. I personally believe there are zillions of universes being born and dying simultaneously every nanosecond. Universes collapse, implode into infinitesimal sizes, and then explode all over again to form new universes. time itself is a complex thing that applies to the illusion of one phrase of existence. Life and death may be a flicker of one of the infinite changes taking place all at once on an endless cycle of fantastic transformations. And then you write, the human brain cannot penetrate the innumerable other dimensions beyond the three-dimensional world we relate to in our daily lives. It is best to look up at the stars, smiling with a sense of glee and awe. For you and I, and everything else in all existence, are an inextricable part of the kaleidoscopic dance of the cosmos. Said so poetically, you and I and everything else in all existence are an inextricable part of the kaleidoscope dance of the cosmos. So we're going to take this break. We'll come back to continue our discussion with Neil Grace about fresh eyes upon the world making sense to a spectacular journey. Welcome back to the final segment of Amplify, a little bit over 20 minutes, and it'll be with Neil Grace, the author of a book titled Fresh Eyes Upon the World, Making Life a Spectacular Journey. Before we took a break, I was reading from the 46th of 83 questions that he poses in this book, and the 46th one is, do advanced life forms exist in the universe, and can we contact them? And so I read from the book, and I need to say that yes, I believe indeed that there are advanced life forms that exist in the universe. I'm not sure that we're able to contact them yet, but I think they've kind of looked over what's going on Earth. Neil? How do you view the answer to this question?
Well, I think it's awfully, again, presumptuous of us to think that we are the only advanced species in the universe or even in the galaxy. And the galaxy has between 100 billion and 400 billion stars, like our sun, and probably... Mm-hmm. Twice as many that are not even visible, called red dwarfs, smaller stars. So I think, yes, I think the universe is definitely alive with all kinds of almost incomprehensible life forms. And I think science is a great tool, but our imagination is even a better one. And I think science does, and I like science. I appreciate and I have a great deal of respect for science, but I think there's only so much we can know. It's almost as if we were the size of an atom living on a blade of grass in a gigantic field. And, you know, the thickness of that blade of grass is the size of a whole planet analogous to us. And we're questioning whether there are other atoms or life forms that live on the other blades of grass. Of course there are. Not all of them, but, and again, I don't know exactly what that involves, what it entails, what they look like. I mean, they might be so vastly different than we are that we might not even recognize it as a living thing once we confront it face to face.
And they might just be spiritual beings, too, that don't have physical form. Maybe it's something...
Right.
Something that they can project,
yes,
if they want to. And we're still looking at Earth alone. I mean, when you compare Earth to the rest of the universe, you can't even begin to imagine it. It's so different. But there's things here that we have yet to discover. It was maybe within the last year that there was a fish that came out of the ocean with legs and walked on the shore. I mean,
yeah.
it's a matter of science, and there's an article in the front page of our newspaper here locally about a place where they are exploring a section where this may be just outside of Pittsburgh, the oldest place of any community that existed on Earth so many years ago, older than some other place. So it's there are just so many things that we really don't understand. So it's fascinating.
I think they're even finding. I think they're even finding life forms that don't even adhere to the basic principles of what life is on Earth in these hot vents on the bottom of the ocean floor, 30,000 feet without any kind of sunlight at all. And they're finding life thrives in these places that they couldn't believe that it could exist.
Right, places where that we couldn't contaminate because they're so far beyond us.
Right,
there's a lesson in that too, that there are still parts of Earth that have not been contaminated by man in any way, have not been diminished, maybe from their original glory. Let's talk about because we're soon approaching a national election. Question number 75, you pose: why do many people refuse to vote for important political elections? And let me just read part to get us started. Most people, you write, choose not to vote because they do not feel an affinity with eligible candidates. They do not like the choices and thus withdraw from participating in the election. There is another factor needing to be mentioned: apathy. Many people who refuse to vote do not care to engage in a system they feel is fundamentally corrupt and flawed. They are so absorbed in their own affairs, dismissing the larger political arena. Another important reason people don't vote is they think their single vote will not matter. And yet it does, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, it does. And it's an imperfect system, admittedly. However, there is no good reason, valid reason, from my point of view, to not vote. I mean, even if it's a statement you're making, support the person that you feel represents you or your values. I think voting is a great privilege, and I think to neglect, to ignore it, to not vote, is really a slap in the face of your own power, your own ability to participate, even though it's incredibly small, admittedly, it is still your vote. And your vote is something that that we all need. And yes, it's frustrating and aggravating to vote, to really strongly believe in somebody running for a government office and the person loses. It's very frustrating. But let's really take care of what we need to. And it doesn't take that much time. You can even do absentee voting. So you don't have to wait in lines. But yes, voting is very important. And I think people need to get much more involved and much more active and write their congresspeople letters and make a stand, whether it's animal protection, it's protecting the environment, it's, you know, protecting a certain national treasure. We don't want to have oil being drilled around Yellowstone National Park or something you strongly and fervently believe in. Take a stand. Not only vote, but do things. Write to people that have the power to make the decisions that will work in your favor.
I like the way this one sentence you used: by not voting, a person is extinguishing the small flame of his power. So,
Yeah,
and how much we need to work together. I'm going to let you just go with this one. I'm not going to add anything. I'm not going to read from this particular question. 77. What are your thoughts about the vegan diet? It almost sounds like a question you wanted to ask for yourself, so you could tell us
That's
what
true.
You believe.
Well, I love life tremendously. I love all creatures. I have tremendous reverence for every creature alive, even the ones I can't coexist with very well because I don't want to live in a rattlesnake den or hang out with lions in Africa or anything. But I respect them and I love animals, everything from the tiniest insect to the most complex animal, like a blue whale or an elephant. And I feel that I can't, for me personally, I can't justify being part of the breeding and slaughtering of animals to consume them when there's so many wonderful foods out there to eat that are not animal products, that are very healthy, that taste great, that will sustain us and keep us at the zenith of health. So I really feel very strongly about honoring all animals. I don't believe in hunting. I don't believe in guns. I know a lot of people are opposed to this, but I believe that the greatest thing we can do as loving beings, to love ourselves and love others, is to also love all of life, to love a tree, to love a flower, to love a chicken, to love a pig, to love a sheep, a cow, anything, a porpoise, a cat, a dog. Every species is a culmination of eons of time that nature designed and shaped this creature. They are just as precious and in many ways even more evolved, maybe not so much cognitively, than we are. Anatomically, they're evolved in incredible ways. They have amazing physical characteristics that allow them to fly. You know, some birds, a peregrine falcon, can fly 230 miles an hour. The point I'm making is that we all share this planet together. We don't need to eat the other animals. We don't need to take animals out of the sea and eat them or do it for sport or anything. Especially in today's world, maybe 10,000, 20,000 years ago when we were more scavengers roaming the plains and the earth, we needed to find scraps of meat to eat. And I'm not even sure of that, but I'm pretty sure it is. But today, when there's such a variety of healthy foods, and the medical world says how much better it is for our bodies for optimum health and longevity, the bottom line is animals are miracles. To me, when I look at an animal, any animal, even the ones I can't understand that seem like a lizard or something so remote from me, I don't have a sense of where it's at, or if it has the same range of feelings. I'm looking at the universe's miraculous creation, and I don't want to harm it. I don't want to be part of it. Even when, you know, if we saw what goes on in the process of producing these animals, we would be horrified. And also, the last thing I'll say is it is extremely environmentally unhealthy. We are harming the environment with all of the water and all of the grains that we need to feed these animals that we eat. And all of the methane gas that is being created is one of the worst carbon polluters on the planet. I read that there's more pollution from harvesting animals than all the fossil fuels that we use on the planet. So I love animals, and I don't want to eat them. And people can make their own choices, but I think if people really search their hearts, they'll find that that what they do, if they become really sensitive, is not in the best interest for themselves, for the animals, and for the earth.
And part of the argument, another part of it, is that you're convinced that what we eat has a great impact on our health, that it shapes us in every way, literally, energetically, and spiritually, you point out. And especially you raise the question, do we really want to put the vibrations of a slaughtered animal's last moments of agony into our bodies? One of the most unaware things.
That's a great point.
Yeah, one of the most unaware things you write we do on a daily basis is invade our beautiful bodies with processed, fake, dead food. So we could go on and on with that. The next question you just referred to, maybe you can amplify on it, and that is, how do we love life? And you write that the most natural and beautiful thing we can do is cherish life with all its wonders and mystery. And as you close this particular chapter, you write, there's only one way to love life. It is to take a deep breath of air, let it fill your lungs, and then let it go by releasing the need to change or control or to understand anything. Then feel throughout your entire body the energy of gratitude and appreciation you now own, because you have realized in your mind you have landed here in this dream as a result of inconceivable powers who loved you enough to create you.
I can't do any better than that.
True.
Yeah. True. No, I mean, I think that's the most important question in the book. I mean, how do we love life? I mean, it sounds rather ordinary and simple, and people say, what does that mean? What do you mean, love life? I love life. But really, truly, deeply, profoundly, passionately love the world. I mean, you don't have to be ecstatic all the time, but just wake up and just say, in such a state of gratitude, to say to yourself, what a gift it is that divinity, nature, God, whatever you want to call it, has allowed me to experience this day in my body, consciously, with my senses, as a sentient being, and given me the freedom to look out at the world and to love it. I mean, that is such a gift. There are no accolades, there are no words that can even encapsulate the vitality of the experience to be alive. And loving life, to me, is the prerequisite, is the precursor to everything that matters in the world. Now, it doesn't mean that every moment is going to be joyous and delightful and triumphant. There are, you know, we all know there are lots of moments when there's sadness and grief and loss and pain and disappointment and disillusionment. But loving life should be the fundamental engine running your life.
Why is music so universally loved? I can almost, let me just read, probably, this is a page and a half. I love music. It's with me almost all the time. You write, music is the language of the spirit of life, singing its rapture to us, earth beings. Music is the one creative force requiring no cognitive process to understand it. You don't have to think to get the wonderful audio vibrations of music. It takes the mystery of life and reshapes it into sublime sounds all of us can appreciate. It is so easy to receive, you can even fall asleep listening to it and not miss a thing. All other forms of artistic expression have roots in the culture from which they originated and require some prior understanding to grasp any meaning from them. Music is not intrusive, nor does it demand our rapt attention. It instantaneously touches the inner chords of our sensitivity, making us feel good. It energizes us and propels our bodies to undulate in rhythm with the sounds. Music reminds us of the beauty of something beyond the ephemeral mystery of our own lives. It reminds us that all forms of life, past and present, are all connected by an invisible harmony, not bound by time or by the physical world. And here it is. Music is the echo of eternity coming back to us over and over again. I believe music are really the sounds that are heard in the universe to what us believers conceive of as heaven, the heavens, if we can say it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Music is one of the greatest entertainment opportunities we can experience, but music really does shape us. It brings a kind of heavenly energy into, I mean, a lot of music does, a heavenly energy into our bodies and into our souls. And music soothes us in many ways. It really, it kind of tames the wildness of our lives. And it really just, it's such a wonderful thing to be able to be the recipient of great music.
What?
And I love all kinds of music.
Yes.
I mean, music is a great teacher, too. I mean, music is one of the ultimate teachers, not just with the lyrics, but even the sounds. because what you feel when you hear the music is just magnificent.
Oh yes, I can listen to one point the music from the 50s, which we were doing a little bit today, my sister and I. She wasn't there, but I was there, so she heard it from us. Or I can listen to for example, on Anton Bruckner's Symphony Number 9 that just came out from the Pittsburgh Symphony. Oh. And a lot of people are speaking of it as something that will again be, as so many other pieces have been directed by the conductor, Manfred Honeck, as possible Grammy winner, as they won a year ago. So much. But what do you expect in the future? Does history repeat itself?
No, I don't think it really does, even though that's a very common phrase that it does. It's a very commonly accepted concept. I think things are always in flux. They're always changing. And I think that civilization and humanity will continue to change. That's one of the great mysteries of the world. And it's, in many ways, it's very refreshing not to know what's going to be. It's maybe a little intimidating and a little scary, but it's really wonderful to know that this unfolding process is ceaseless. And I don't know what direction it's going to go into. I'm very, very optimistic and positive. I think we set the tone for what will be by what we do now. We are the torchbearers of tomorrow's dreams by where we go with what we have, both our resources and our beliefs and our spirituality. I really want to say, because I think we're getting close to the end, that spirituality is a very important thing that many people neglect. I mean, it's important to be physically healthy. It's important to be psychologically healthy. It's important to be socially healthy. It's important to be worldly healthy, knowledgeable, et cetera, financially healthy. But it's important to be spiritually healthy. And only the individual can define what that really means. But the more we can produce a sense of consciousness, a sense of expansion in our thinking and our feelings, we are going to be spiritually healthy. And that's the whole purpose of my writing this book. And people can also go to my website and see some wonderful, very beautiful videos and learn more about the book and me, neilgrace.com. Neil with an A, N-E-A-L, Grace. It's my original name, GRACE.com. And I'm just looking forward to a future that is vibrant and sets a tone of joy for everyone in every walk of life and in every nation, because we're all members of the same world.
Our guest this evening has been Neil Grace, talking about his book, Fresh Eyes Upon the World, Making Life a Spectacular Journey. Neil, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it and enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night now.
So we've come to the end of the program. Let me just read a passage from his book where his closing words, his very last words in the book are, "You are the living manifestation of God's creation. Call God whatever you want. You are a pulsating force of the mysterious universe. You were born out of the infinitesimal spark that gave birth in nanoseconds to the entire universe. You are a child of the heavens. When you see another being, you see the source of creation itself, formed out of the mystery from which everything came. You are in everyone's soul. We are all astonishing pieces of the eternal process." Don't forget then how precious life is and how powerful love is. tell someone now that you love him or her, pray for peace, as if it depended on you alone, and come back next Sunday and amplify with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.